Byron Bay, where there are a lot of criminal elements, you know, that are coming in. And so you have to pay for more locks on your door. And maybe you have to put a burglar alarm system. And maybe you have to buy a gun, take out extra insurance. All of that adds to the GDP. So as far as economists are going, your life is getting better. You're increasing the GDP. I think, you know, if you want to talk about that seriously, get rid of this government right now.
Well, you're with David Suzuki today on scan.org, your weekly grassroots magazine. There's also a lot more coming from the Youth Plug, from the Youth Club and others. Have a listen today. Scan.org stays with you for 1 hour.
Called me to do a pre-interview, and they said, well, what do you think about eco-terrorism? And I said, I want to talk about that because you've got an eco-terrorist as your prime minister and as a president. I said, screw that, we're not paying attention. The United States, and we know that Bush is an eco-terrorist, but we also have your prime minister now, and as someone who thinks of Australia as my second country, I'm humiliated by this, that this man, yes, but you re-elected him. He was re-elected!
Hi everybody, we're at the Nimbin Youth Club today. Gwen, what are we doing today?
I'm making lanterns because we're going to the lantern parade.
The globalization of environmental messages has led us all to a new urgency on pressing matters such as species extinction, climate change, and peak oil. Because there are so many voices heard, sometimes with conflicting messages, and because mainstream media often don't get it right or tend to oversimplify complex environmental issues, we need to find those people who can communicate to us complex processes in a clearer way for us to understand. I went to Byron Bay with David and Graham here from Nimbim to interview David Suzuki, a Canadian scientist, during his visit in Eastern Australia. We are proud to present a little exclusive scoop from that afternoon in Byron Bay. Have a listen.
Like to find out from you what you think about Roundup and glyphosate. Our whole shire seems to be saturated with it at the moment, in fact the whole planet, and they're all telling us it's quite safe, and I don't trust Monsanto, and I wonder what your opinion is on it.
I've come to the conclusion Monsanto is a truly evil company. This is why, you know, the GMO means get Monsanto out. And the reason I've come to this conclusion is my great hero was a woman named Rachel Carson. When Rachel Carson published Silent Spring, the chemical industry led a horrendous assault against her, and it was Monsanto that led the charge. And they have done nothing to recover their reputation as far as I'm concerned. They've done terrible things. I don't know how many of you know of the case of Percy Schmeiser in Saskatchewan. And they're just an evil company. Glyphosate has always been touted as this incredibly safe biodegradable compound. But I see now there have been a number of reports of the impact of glyphosate on frogs. And it's devastating. So I'm hoping this is going to be the nail in the coffin on glyphosate. Because glyphosate, of course, is Roundup, and that's what so many of Monsanto's crops are Roundup ready crops. And if we can nail glyphosate as an ecologically very destructive compound, then I think that's going to do Monsanto a huge blow.
And the question is, what do you think about the possibilities of a neutral Australia helping the situation? Of course, environmentally aware people at the same time?
Well, I think, you know, if you want to talk about that seriously, get rid of this government right now.
That's right. First.
I normally am very, very cautious about criticizing governments in foreign countries. I'm a visitor in your country, and I don't have that right. But I'll tell you, I've become very, very pissed off. What's the program I'm going to be on, Andrew, on Friday? Huh? Thursday Today Show. And they called me to do a pre-interview, and they said, well, what do you think about eco-terrorism? And I said, I want to talk about that because you've got an eco-terrorist as your prime minister and as a president. Now, they thought I was joking. But I'm dead serious. That's what I'm going to say on Thursday, because I think we now have international law that says Kyoto is international law. We've had it ratified by enough countries representing enough people where it is now international law. Only two countries, industrialized countries, have said, screw that, we're not paying attention. The United States, and we know that Bush is an eco-terrorist, but we also have your prime minister now, and as someone who thinks of Australia as my second country, I'm humiliated by this. That this man, yes, but you re-elected him. He was re-elected. Sorry, he's your prime minister. He is. What he's doing now is committing a crime against future generations. And I'll tell you, I was in Kyoto in 97 when that agreement was banged out. And the Australian delegation was shameful. They were whinging and moaning and groaning and saying, we're special, we've got to use coal, we can't pass. So finally the delegate said, okay, we'll let you allow your target to be an increase above 1990 levels. Only Australia was given a target that was an increase above 1990 levels, and Mr. Howard is saying you can't even meet that. I think it's absolutely shameful. And
are you with me? This is David Suzuki speaking in Byron Bay last week, and he spoke to the writers group from the Writers Center in Byron Bay, and we have to thank everyone who helped us getting this interview. There's also a little section following later with an interview exclusively with Graham Ferguson.
There are alternative economic models that are basing themselves on nature. Are you familiar? Do you think they have answers for us? Is this outside your field?
I'm not an economist, but I've got a brain.
Yeah.
And I agree with Hazel Henderson that the conventional economics that we now live within is a form of brain damage. The reason, and I've said this, I've been saying this for years, the problem is that economists think they're so smart. They think that the basis of the economy is us, that economics is built on human creativity and productivity. So if you ask an economist, where in your studies and in your economic modeling, where do you put the ozone layer? Where do you put underground aquifers of fossil water? Where do you put topsoil and biodiversity? You know what they say? You seem to know a lot about economics. They say those are externalities. And I didn't know this, but it's apparently an economic term, meaning it's not in the economy. So if you externalize the real world, you might as well be on Mars. It's got nothing to do with the world that I live in. And nature is producing all kinds of services. All flowering plants are fertilized by nature, not us. And, you know, when you get your water, it's filtered through the ground, through soil fungi and bacteria, and plant roots are doing the filtering for us. When an animal dies in the forest, then there are all kinds of bacteria and fungi that will return it to the soil. Plants will fix nitrogen from the air. I mean, all of these services are performed by nature. And economists consider this an externality. That is stupid. It's more than stupid. It's lunatic. And now there is a group of people called ecological economists. And I get very nervous about them. These are good guys. But I get very nervous about them because what they say is, oh, well, we better internalize what is an externality. Well, I get very nervous about that because, quite frankly, I think there are a lot of things in the world that are sacred. How do you put a price? How do you internalize something that's sacred? It's beyond price. So when these guys start saying, oh, well, it's just a matter of getting the proper pricing, I get really antsy about that. But what they do is carry out an exercise that is a very useful exercise. They say, look, nature is doing all these services for us. What would it cost us to ignore nature and do it ourselves? Okay? What would it cost us to replace nature? Could we pollinate all of the plants in the world? Well, we couldn't. There's no way. It's estimated in upper New York State on a summer day, on a warm summer day, insects fertilize a trillion flowers. How could we possibly do that with our machines? But in Vancouver, we get all of our water from three watersheds surrounded by old-growth rainforest. And the foresters are saying, those trees are worth a lot of money. We should clear-cut them. So, and we've been fighting that. Well, let's suppose the foresters went out, we clear-cut those, and we have to build a great big building that will filter it for us. We can get an estimate of what the value of those old-growth forests are by the replacement cost of our filtration plant, right? So this is what Bob Constanza, an ecological economist in his group at Vermont, have done. This came out several years ago. Toting up all of nature's services, they come to a very low estimate of nature performing $35 trillion of services a year. Okay, that's what it cost us to do what nature's doing for nothing. Now, to put that in perspective, if you add up all of the GDPs, the annual GDPs of all of the countries in the world, when Constanza published this, it came to $18 trillion. So nature is doing twice as much service as all of the economies of the planet. And economists call that an externality. Well, if that isn't a demonstration of brain damage, I don't know what is. Now, we compound the problem by allowing economists to determine what economic indicators are to show us how well the economy is doing. It's called GDP. Any exchange of money for goods and services adds to the GDP. But the nutty thing about this is they don't care why you're paying money for goods and services. As long as you pay money, that adds to the GDP. So let's say that you live in a part of Byron Bay where there are a lot of criminal elements, you know, that are coming in. And so you have to pay for more locks on your door, and maybe you have to put a burglar alarm system, and maybe you have to buy a gun, take out extra insurance. All of that adds to the GDP. So as far as economists are going, your life is getting better. You're increasing the GDP. In 1979, when the Exxon Valdez oil spill happened, the American GDP rose by $2 billion because that's what they spent cleaning up the oil spill. What a nutty indicator is that? What does that tell you about the quality of the world? And yet every politician will turn somersaults trying to get the GDP to keep going up. This is crazy. We've developed this is a long answer to your question. Economics is just the way, it's a totally screwed up system.
But David, if I may, you've answered the question by saying it's a question of values. The economic attitude as it stands is a very narrow tunnel vision focus. You're opening up to broader values. So that's the sort of economy we need, which reflects ecology. I mean, and there are systems that are being developed now, and that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. As you rightly point out, economics and ecology are companion disciplines. One's a study of the home, and the other's a management of home, and economics should take its cue from ecology. But right now, economics has acquired this position of being the top dog and running the whole show, and it's very, very dangerous.
Thank you.
You were listening to David Suzuki in Byron Bay. We're very grateful for that interview. Also, Graham Ferguson interviewed David Suzuki exclusively for NMFM. Have a listen to this one.
we have somehow forgotten our biological nature. We think we're so clever that we've invented a system that can just grow forever. Now, let me just, I know we've run out of time, but let me just give you a very powerful reason why we've got to get off this.
Right.
Anything growing steadily over time is called exponential growth. Anything growing exponentially has a predictable doubling time. If it's growing at 1% a year, whether it's the amount of garbage you make, the amount of land you use, the number of people in a city, anything growing at 1% a year will double in 70 years, 2% in 35 years, 3% in 24 years, 4% in 17 and a half years. We have a predictable doubling time. Okay, I'm going to give you a system analogous to the Earth. And it's a test tube.
A test tube.
Full of, you know this story?
Of course.
Full of food for bacteria. I'm going to put one bacterial cell in, and it is going to divide every minute. That's exponential growth. So at time zero, there's one cell. 1 minute, there are two. 2 minutes, there are four. 3 minutes, there are eight. That's exponential growth. And at 60 minutes, the test tube's completely full, and there's no food left. Okay? So when is a test tube half full? At 59 minutes. So at 58 minutes, it's 25% full. At 57 minutes, it's 12.5% full. At 55 minutes of a 60-minute cycle, it's 3% full. So if at 55 minutes, one of the bacteria said, "Hey, guys, I think we got a population problem," the other bacteria would say, "What the hell have you been smoking, man? 97% of the test tube's empty, and we've been around for 55 minutes. And they'd be 5 minutes away from filling. So bacteria are no smarter than people. 59 minutes, they go, "Oh my God, Jack's right. We got a population problem. The hell are we going to do? Give that money to, not to the economists, give that money to those geneticists and those computer guys." And by God, in less than a minute, they make three new test tubes full of food. So they've quadrupled the amount of food in space. So they're saved, right? What happens? 60 minutes, all the first one's full. 61 minutes, second's full. 62 minutes, all four are full. So by quadrupling the amount of food in space, you buy two extra minutes. How do we quadruple the number of species? How do we quadruple air, water, soil? You can't. And every biologist I've talked to has said, we are past the 59th minute. All these guys that are saying we got to have more are saying we've got to commit suicide faster. It is suicidal because, first of all, we don't ask the critical question, how much is enough? Do I need more? The hell do we got all this growth for? And we just dig this hole. Now, when I say this to business people, they get very pissed off at me.
Oh, yes.
How dare you say that? Look at us. We're living longer. The stores are filled with stuff. What are you talking about? We're in the 59th minute. Yeah, you know why? We're using up the rightful legacy of our children and grandchildren as if this is progress.
Yes.
That's deficit financing, and that's what we're involved in
now. And it's irreplaceable.
That's exactly.
Well, I want to give credit to Rebecca Parker, from the coordinator from the Byron Bay Writers Event, where David Suzuki spoke last week.
100 years. That's a pretty devastating. That's a devastating statement. And normally, I only say that when I'm alone with my wife and I'm drunk.
Oh, there you go, Stephen Newman. Anyway, stay tuned, because why do we talk about all this? What's the future? The future are our children. And we're going to come very shortly to that after a little sponsorship for the Rainforest Rescue Action Group.
Hi, Wendy. I'm standing here in Nimbim, and Wendy is responsible for leading us to this exciting scoop with David Suzuki. Wendy, please, tell us more.
I've been doing some volunteer work for Rainforest Rescue, in which we are raising funds to buy back areas of land in the Daintree Forest to keep it protected forever. And through that connection, we have a community service announcement from David Suzuki, which led me to the connection to help you with getting your interview with him.
I'm David Suzuki. Australia's Daintree Rainforest is one of the most spectacular ecosystems in the world. Two-thirds of Australia's magnificent Daintree Rainforest remains unprotected. You can help buy back and protect it forever by supporting the work of Rainforest Rescue. Each $20 buys 10 square meters of our World Heritage Value Daintree Rainforest.
To make a donation to Rainforest Rescue's Daintree Buy Back and Protect Forever project, visit rainforestrescue.org.au.
Come on, Australia.
Yeah, come on, Australia. Do it for your children, because this is what we're going to go next.
Nimbim Community Radio.
We are specialists in digital glitches and a world leader from intergalactic warp transmission fields outside of this universe.
I'm here in the Nimbim High School with Ashley. As I promised last week, I want to follow up what the young people in Nimbim are doing. How are you, Ashley?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Why are we here today?
Every Wednesday we run dance workshops for all the young kids. An indigenous woman from Casino comes out named Maria, and the kids absolutely love her. And they teach hip-hop dancing mostly. The kids... that's what their biggest interest is, hip-hop. They did contemporary one week and they were just complained and they wanted hip-hop again next week. So today you're going to see some hip-hop, yeah.
Oh, lovely. And is this part of the whole integral hip-hop art forms to get all the segments sort of represented here and trained?
Yeah, definitely. And it's a part of... last year there was a meeting about more sport for Nimbin, and this is one of the outcomes from that, dance. So, and I say that is an awesome part of sport as well, dance is, as well as the art form.
Well, anyway, we promised to feature all the parts of it, so I'm going to see you next week again on the third component of it.
Party.
So, anyway, here, kids around, you come here for dancing today?
Yeah.
And you?
Yeah.
Do you want to say something to the world?
Peace out. No.
What are you feeling when you dance? Does it give you a good
feeling? Yeah, it's good to get more exercise.
Yeah. These guys are some of the best dancers we have, especially little Gwen here. She's an amazing dancer. Can't believe her.
Excellent.
Oh, really nice. This is we're all gonna die.
Why?
Don't believe her. We're all gonna die. She's lying.
Yeah, there's a lot of energy around it, so it's good the dance totally wears them out. Yeah.
I think I better get out of the way, Ashley. So I'll visit you next week again and see. What is the third component? We did graffiti on the first interview, remember?
Yeah, graffiti, and then we got dance.
Today's dance, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's... rhyming hip-hop, like spoken word.
The poetry,
it's yeah.
Over there.
Yeah, and we're hopefully going to...
Where is that?
Hopefully... it's going to be a further workshop. The first workshop we run on the third will be dance, I'm pretty sure, as well. Yeah.
Well, I wish you all the best and stay in touch to give me a note when you do the next component or when you've got something lined up. I would really like to feature you.
Yeah, thanks, Abe. Thanks, Abe, for your time.
Hi, Maria. I heard you come all the way from Casino to our Nimbim kids to teach them the dance.
Yeah, first chance to kind of get this way. It's been the first time I've been here for my whole life. Just a great opportunity to teach the kids dance, and they're really energetic and really enthusiastic to learn, and it's kind of getting bigger and bigger every time I have a class. There's more kids turning up, and they're, you know, it's been really good.
Well, it seems a very popular sort of activity that young people do, but this age, and it looks like a whole curriculum on things actually shared with skilled people like you and Zach with the graffiti we were reporting on last week. How come, is this like a... Is it so popular because it's a wide accessible kind of way of expressing your individual thoughts and feelings?
Sorry, can you say that again?
What do you do this with dance? What do you feel when you dance? Is this sort of an expression thing?
Yeah, it's kind of a lot of who I am and a lot of kind of a medium for the only way that I express myself. Like, it's through my body, and sometimes I find it really hard to actually speak and stuff, and to express what I want to say through my body comes a whole lot easier.
And that just makes it popular for people because it doesn't sort of require a full intellectual study of language and essay writing skills, etc., etc. It's just an easy access, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, and wherever you go, you know, dance is kind of one of those things that, you know, you go to a party or wherever you go, you've got, you know, even if you're just putting your feet together or whatever, you know, the kids are kind of learning that skill. And well, what, you know, better time now to do it and learn it, get better at it, and, you know, yeah.
Yeah, no, well, it's well known, dance and music, they are sort of languages, are universal across borders and race and everything. Well, thank you very much, Maria. I would like to wish you the best of getting our kids up on the top scale and the cutting edge of dance in hip-hop style.
Oh, yeah, so, I hope so.
I can hear the enthusiasm. I can see that I should get out of the way.
Yeah. Cool, thank you.
I tried to make pizza a few nights ago, but, yeah, there wasn't really enough room.
Oh, yeah. Pizza is a great thing.
Mm. Yummy. Is this your radio show now?
Yeah, no.
No?
No.
I've been on the radio.
Yeah?
Yeah, with Maria.
And what are you doing on the radio?
Well, I was able to pick a few songs and I did about an hour, and then Maria just went on to her.
A whole show?
Yeah, well, she had a 2-hour slot, and I went on for an hour of that 2 hours, and then she got an hour to do her show.
Do you want to tell our listeners what you are doing today here? The group, I mean?
We're finishing making our lanterns for the lantern parade. I think it's in Lismore.
Yeah,
it's in
Lismore. Lovely, thank you. Well, let's see what happens next.
Hi, everybody. We're at the Nimbin Youth Club today. Gwen, what are we doing today?
I'm making lanterns because we're going to the lantern parade.
When's the lantern parade?
In 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks.
Cool, are you going to go to it?
Maybe.
TJ, are you going to go?
I don't know.
Are you going to go?
I might go.
Ashley, what about you?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to take you guys.
Oh, my God, seriously? Your turn to talk.
Yeah, so next week again, we're going to check out what our future, that is the kids. Up to next week. I heard they have a young women's group, so stay tuned. But now let's go to Australian politics, because we had the unfair dismissal legislation last week, and this is a little bit of a kerfuffle there in Australian politics. Have a listen to the Nimbin voices and then my own very own mixed impressions. Contacting, I wanted to convey some impressions from the latest initiative of the federal government that they don't allow any more, there won't be any more unfair dismissals, I heard.
Well, there could well be unfair dismissals, but you won't hear about them. And talk about workplace, I think, first of all, you need a workplace, because here in Nimbin, it seems to be very, very minor, the workplace. So I don't know what's going to happen there. I don't think there will be any unfair dismissals until we have a workplace.
And what about, one more question, sorry, what about, is it possible to pay money and to get a workplace? Is that the new paradigm?
I don't know how you get a workplace. I think what you need is finance, which is very scarce.
Well, I've got some pocket money.
Every little bit helps.
I don't want to talk about the Whitlam era.
Well, I heard the federal government has now removed all unfair dismissal. There's no more unfair dismissal, I heard.
Oh, yeah, I mean, unfair dismissals have always been and will be, but in Nimbin this is not a problem at all, not in the first place and not in the second place and not in the government place. We are all volunteers, and we volunteer 48 hours a day in 2 shifts. So there is no need for any security.
Is there a specific technique, cloning or something? How you do it?
Oh, no, I mean, you can't really do it, but there's such a demand here, and there's such a high unemployment rate on volunteers, and such a demand for volunteers that you can easily do two shifts 48 hours a day.
Yeah, I heard they want to establish a little outboard, an outdoor, like what it's called, an external office from Centrelink just for volunteers here in Nimbin.
Oh, yeah, that would be nice if volunteers would be managed by Centrelink.
Yeah, well, that is the unfair dismissal report from Nimbin, but I called this one coming up the mandatory unfair dismissal, Australia style.
This package embodies one of the great pieces of unfinished
I guarantee that out of 9 million Australian workers,
3.6 million workers will have no remedy against being unfairly dismissed.
Set the minimum wage by the government. We'll seek to reduce minimum wages over time. Annual leave, personal leave, parental leave, and maximum working hours. Will no longer have the power to
kickstart to productivity.
That this is not the Australian way.
The attacks continue. The disappointment
is very, very important to our country. Don't let it go, George. It's going to work out.
It tries through all the spin and camouflage, the verbal camouflage.
We are finally moving away from a 19th century model of industrial relations.
Presents a massive assault on Australian workers.
I've been a better political friend of the Australian workers than any. My guarantee is
soon be in detention on Christmas Island.
See on the run.
Missing on the run is
being wrongfully expelled. Official Amanda Vanstone was perplexed.
I have a face of it. It's inexplicable.
Yes. They are recollecting through a muddy and distorted lens.
My guarantee is
soon be in detention on Christmas Island.
See on the run.
Anything on the run has
been wrongfully expelled. Official Amanda Vanstone was perplexed.
I have a face of it. It's inexplicable.
Yes.
They are recollecting through a muddy and distorted lens.
Doing what the Australian public expects it to do. I still have full confidence in it.
John, you have my confidence and that of the President.
But not yet.
Systemic failure. I can't tell the Australian people
they're going to deny you your liberty and lock you up.
You start pillorying people for it. The relationship between the US and Australia is now, strong.
That in itself is somewhat distressing for a normal person.
Tell the Australian people they're going to deny you your liberty and lock you up.
I can't tell the Australian people they're going to deny you your liberty and lock you up.
We can start pillorying people for it.
The Howard government has been fiddling around with this for months.
The relationship between the US and Australia is now, strong.
That's in itself is somewhat distressing for a normal person.
Suicides are increasing.
Even if we stop short of suicide, there are serious problems.
The extraordinary difficulty that this puts a government in place, and that could result in the future in
the lickspittle, neocon.
I know that standards have slipped over the last few years. You're remarkably cavalier with any idea of justice. This is the mother of all smokescreens.
Mr. Speaker, let's have none of this rubbish.
We're actually hitting the ceiling.
where we're actually going hell-bent for leather. When you're going in full tilt, what we've got.
I'm offering a circuit breaker here. Let's get rid of the hairy chest nonsense.
I hope that it's true. It's true.
That there was a bit of racism involved.
Planning being undertaken for a terrorist attack in Australia.
But I'm very uneasy. I think we ought not to respond to that if we enter onto a slippery slope.
Powerful international players. Area of activity might be in regional Australia.
Now is as a next step.
With Al Qaeda in the capital, every soldier and every family dreams of. Streets of Fallujah.
Great majority of people in this country who have trained with Al Qaeda, and other terrorist groups continue to operate legally.
Angler for their water supply. But it's undrinkable.
The Dow down more than 20 points. Oil at $46.80 a barrel.
I don't want the damn money.
Mandatory unfair dismissal here this week in Australia, and it is 21 minutes to the hour. Let's have a little blast to the past. It sounds like a déjà vu. I think it is. Let's check that one.
Well, from an hymn, an arm, an M, to a blast in the past from the deep dungeons of NIM FM's archive, you might think there's a déjà vu on the topic. With the release of its latest slave relations reform program, the minister has been accused of many things, quote, pushing a whopping 400,000 ex-slaves over the edge of the bight into the Southern Ocean. Critics also claim that it doesn't seriously address the problem, quote, it is really only parking a lot of long-term ex-slaves into dubious slave networks with intensive slave assistance, consisting mainly of window dressing exercises such as bootlicking and role-play, perfecting the imitation of a doormat and other techniques to maintain general slave readiness for slave positions, which simply don't exist in the present slave economy. Furthermore, importing large numbers of foreign slaves who talk with a funny accent doesn't help. It puts well-adjusted slaves like old Johnny, age 44, straight out of the slave force and off to the long queues of liberated long-term ex-slaves. The proposal also intends to cut with its cutting edge into the League of the Disability Slaves and slice the eligibility criteria into countless very thin slivers. For impaired slave Harold Brainless, age 22, a buggy accident victim, it means no more daily visits by the sex worker, a tragic turn for a man without limbs and no alternatives. In the last decade, the government created 40,000 new enslavements indeed. However, these have been filled mostly with suitable casual and part-time slaves and or with Spanish cyborgs of the manana kind to better suit a shrinking slave market. Finally, in Australia today, there are many child slaves growing up with their parents being long-term ex-slaves, living off the public slave purse for many years without an end in sight, nor hope to return to enslavement in the foreseeable future.
Listeners may be warned that parts of this show, although seemingly of a political nature, appear to be like a mid-level horror movie. Parental guidance is recommended.
Yeah, I'm here in the public again as I try to do the best for NIM FM and for the community. You are from Skylarks. You're the vocalist, aren't you?
Yes.
Lisa. Hi, how are you?
Hello, Martin. Hello, NIM FM.
I see your poster all the time, everywhere. Occasionally, you do actually work as a musician. Is that true?
It's true. We're really lucky.
And your group is all right.
Thank you.
Doing all right.
We could do better. It's an expensive hobby, as you know. But compared to other bands and groups I've been in, we're actually getting more paid gigs.
Yeah.
than I've ever had before.
That's a hopeful message for our peers, isn't it?
And we're getting, what's lovely, I think, is that people that have seen us play at the pubs and things are now actually booking us for parties and, you know, like events. So you're going to see the posters for Skylarks. I know that the A&I Society have asked us to play on the 1st of April. They're doing a Rat Pack night where you all dress up, Frank Sinatra.
For April, of course.
That's right, but it's a fundraiser for the
showground.
I'm sure
you're competent.
Well, it means we get to do all the Frank Sinatra numbers and everything. Hey, hey.
Yeah.
So I'm really enjoying being a
you
jazz singer.
You have a slogan on your poster saying, fly with us. Now, is that
come
sort
fly
of,
with us.
Is that the reason why Virgin Blue is coming into trouble in this country?
I hadn't thought of that, Martin. Let me think.
Drawing the customers away.
Could be. It's based on that, come fly with me, come fly, let's fly away. And we realised that we had...
And
about
you couldn't
five
be
songs
by
in our
Virgin Blue yet for them.
No, they haven't asked us, no. But we realised we had about five songs in our repertoire that were about flying. And we've got another four or something that are about food. So we think we've got it.
Do I detect a middle class suppressed kind of traumatization of childhood about food or about flying?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Without a doubt, yes.
Thank you very much, Lisa. So anybody seeing a poster with the Skylarks out, please go and see them. They're really entertaining. They've got a lovely front person, which is Lisa Yates.
And Bob Dooley.
And Bob Dooley on the double bass. Oh,
not
my
only,
God.
Yes.
No?
Looks good, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's big.
It's big. It's big.
All right. Well, yeah. Jazz away, you darling. You're lovely.
Thank you.
Also Ian Rowe and Shane Manuel on this band. Here we are going to go to a local person who is the lucky bus driver, Douglas.
It's Jim, is it?
Doug.
You're driving a tourist bus to Nimnim here regularly.
That's right, I work with Jimmy's tours,
I'm doing a radio show on Mondays on Nimnim FM, and my theme is people working in and around Nimnim.
Right, yeah.
And I was curious how you sort of how you see this sort of as a work for your income and for your family support. Are you working to support your family?
All my kids have grown up. During the years that I had kids, I was a preschool teacher on quite a low income too, as I might say. You know, I was at $10 or $11 an hour for many years. Life was difficult then, but these days, as I gave up mortgages, I don't have electricity bills, and life's not so bad. I can work for 2 or 3 days a week to cut it pretty well.
Is this a kind of a choice that you choose to work instead of being forced to work? Can you say that?
I definitely chose to work. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've always chosen to work. Capricorn, I am what I do. I am what I do. I've also got another little business where we work in schools and markets making candles with the kids. Wacky Wags, that's us.
So, can I, well, most people have a certain amount of income derived from their work for their life support. Can you sort of say that it suffices what your activities bring in?
Or
do you need extra support?
No, not at this stage.
You can live with what you're doing.
Because I don't pay rent, don't have a mortgage.
Excellent.
Yeah. That's the only reason why. If I was tied to rent, it would be a drag. It was only yesterday I was washing the floor, which is one of the things I do for my keep over in Mullumbimby, right? And I was washing the floor, and I was thinking, it's a pain in the ass. It's a piss off. But then I started reflecting on, the fact that I was washing the floor was so I didn't have to come up with, $200 or $300 rent per week, and that made washing the floor much better.
Yeah, it's a good business move.
Yeah. That works for me, man. It works for me beautifully, yeah.
Maybe a final question, Doug. It was a lovely piece of music. Is this your personal interest for a while? You're doing mandolin playing?
Yes. Inspired by a lot of kind of world music.
Yeah.
I just, it sort of turns me on. I play a bit of Irish, a bit of Middle Eastern. And I don't know where that tune come from. Some sort of...
Yeah, it had a bit of an Arabic flavor.
Nice Arabic sort of feel to it, I suppose, yeah. It's just one of my passions, man. Some people go across the road and have a joint to get their rocks up. Well, I'm not allowed to because I'm working, so I play a few tunes, and that keeps me clear and clean. That's good shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about the future of work? Have you got sort of for yourself ideas what this could in this society mean in the future? Yeah.
Right. Well, it's a big question here in Nimnim because I've lived here since about 1981. So I've always called it pretty much the fool's paradise because, I mean, it's a great lifestyle shown about the income. And a lot of people suffer in this way. As I look around at my peers, as they're sort of getting older, 50 plus, it becomes more and more difficult to get a living. So dependence on Social Security and that is kind of like a reality.
Yeah.
It is a reality, yeah. But for myself, I can imagine... touring with Jimmy and making candles for a long time to come. I'll be hard at it.
There are sustainable ways you can see continue.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm lucky in that way. I feel I am lucky in that way because it's, it doesn't happen to everyone. Most people, shit, if they need work, they want to grow dope or go and work some straight ass job at Kentucky Fried Chicken or McDonald's in Lismore, or go and work for Sunny Brand in Byron Bay chasing chooks. Now that's suffering.
Yeah.
I can't see anyone getting a real buzz out of that sort of work, and it's unfortunate, really unfortunate that people have to do that. Isn't it?
Well, there's always a choice somewhere.
Oh, we do have choices. Yeah. It's true. Okay. We're not like the people in Africa.
But that's not up to us to judge other people's situation.
Yeah. Can't. Yeah.
From the east to the east, to the west, to the west, from the north, from the north. To the west, to the west, from the north, from the north, to the south, to the south.
I've got a very, very interesting question. I read an article in the Herald today, Saturday, that Liechtenstein abandons or makes a law against feeding cows with marijuana. I didn't know about that. Is that true?
Yeah, apparently it was, and it's part of the EU agreement thing. There was a the ratio of cows per litres of milk produced was just far too high in Liechtenstein. It seems that they were feeding them the scrap from the hemp processing plant, which gave the cows a munchies. They went out and ate more grass, and they were just producing too much milk, mate, you know, and it was actually highly flavoured, and people right throughout the European community were after the Liechtenstein milk. So that was just too unfair. So unless they can all do it, no one can do it.
Well, I had the feeling that feeding cows with marijuana was a preventative measure to avoid mad cow disease in Europe.
Well, that was another thing too. I mean, they can't have like all the other cows in Europe with mad cow and the ones in Liechtenstein without.
Actually,
so,
by the way, where is Liechtenstein?
It's in Europe, man.
Yeah, all right.
It's actually, it's isn't it snug between Switzerland and Germany somewhere on the way down? No, further over near France-y sort of thing, isn't it? Up in those bloody, some of those,
yeah,
haven't they got the
Switzerland,
Pyrenees?
France, I guess, but anyway.
Pyrenees or the Alps or something.
They had enormous influential power in Europe, I heard.
They have. Yeah. They got a lot of money.
Yeah. Back to the marijuana feeding cows, why don't the Australians have tried that yet?
No, apparently, as far as we've got, there's a little guy down in Tasmania with Cape Barren geese, and he's given him the seed. And somehow,
well, that's far too luxurious for cows.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Does it show in the milk?
Not of the geese.
Warning.
In the unlikely event that you are caused to laugh while listening to NIMFM, even if it is because of something unconnected with the content of the program, listeners are advised to laugh in moderation. Do not listen to NIMFM if a relative of yours has previously died from laughing. Thank you for listening to today's scan.org, your weekly grassroots magazine. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to contact me, here's an email address, nimfm@nimfm.org. All letters lowercasing. So, all you folks out there, have a lovely day and perhaps catch me next week again. Ciao. For our American friends, a little note and postcard from the past of the Dungeons of Nimbim archive.
Fellow patriots, we stand here on this platform today together, united as one, with the knowledge that we have killed more people than any other nation before us. We are standing here arm in arm supporting ourselves, and that's why, as your president, I like to take this opportunity to inform the American people that from this day forward, the Bush administration will be pursuing a green policy. That's right, a green policy. We are saying no more war, no more war, no more guns, no more oil. We are going green, okay? Got it?
Dear President, Mr. President, I have one question. Is it true you would come to hug my trees in my garden at home in my county?
Well, thank you, sir, for taking the time to ask such an important question in this country's time of need. And personally, no, I will not be hugging the trees, but a government advisor will. So rest assured, people, we are committed all the way. You're either with us on this one or against us.
Do you have a prescription to be filled? Drop it into the Nimbin Village Pharmacy.
opened Monday to Friday 9 till 5:30 p.m. and Saturday morning until 12:30. As Ian attends to your prescription, have a look at the wide range of over-the-counter medicines and natural products. Or simply relax in the air-conditioned comfort. Nimbin Village Pharmacy, servicing our community and passionate sponsors of NIM FM.
For lovers of traditional Thai cuisine, Mot Dang Thai Takeaway and Eatery. Cooked fresh daily, beautiful Thai meals. Penang and green curries, chicken satays, musumam beef, stir fries, noodles. And for the vegan conscious, local biodynamic tofu curry. Most foods are gluten-free. The coffee is grown at Lillian Rock. Sit down or take away. Or have your function catered for. Mot Dang Thai, next to the NRMA. Phone 6689-0028. Spicy sponsors of NIM FM. NIM FM thanks our sponsors for supporting our efforts to make community building easier. Stay tuned with Tony Stallone coming in any second here.